Okay, there, that joke's on the handout, I think I'm going to have to...
So I wanted to start out again by thanking you and Anton. I also wanted to just note autobiographically that I remember standing in the philosophy department's mail room in the Syracuse University where I went to graduate school. And I remember picking up a 1992, it would have been a copy of the Journal of Philosophy, and seeing this interesting article called Metaphysical Pluralism. At the time, I was defending a sort of conceptual pragmatism in my dissertation, being supervised by somebody who was certainly not a pragmatist, William Alston. And I remember picking up this article, and I remember standing there in the mailroom while people pushed past me and jostled me, reading that article, transfixed, struck by a beam of sunlight. And that experience, it's never left me, and it's a mark of how influential you has been on my thinking, and it's a great honor to be here to talk about your work. William James once said that truth is the good in the way of belief. For James, this not only signaled that truth was a value, it told us what truth was. Truth's being a value, in his view, was a fact about the nature of truth itself. Nowadays, those of us working on truth for a living mostly ignore James's insight. The currently dominant philosophical view among specialists holds that the concept of truth is nothing but an expressive device, one that allows us to overcome our merely medical limitations and generalize over infinitely large chains of propositions. On this view, truth may be a value, but the fact that fact is superfluous to our understanding of what truth is. I aim to make 3 points today. First, I will argue that talk of the value of truth often slides back and forth between talk of two really different values. Second, I'll urge that reflection on those values helps us to understand what truth is. And in this respect, I agree not only with James, but with the more recent work of Hugh Price, who has argued that, quote, a norm of truth plays an essential and little recognized role in our assertoric dialogue, end quote. For both Price and myself, to understand truth, one must understand what it does, its role in our cognitive economy. Its role in our cognitive economy and truth's normative dimension is an integral part of that role. But Price also thinks, at least sometimes, that we should regard truth as something like a metaphysical myth. And here I disagree. My third point is that reflection on truth's values pushes us in a slightly different direction, one that opens the door to certain metaphysical possibilities that even a pragmatist can love. Okay, so first section to two values that I spoke of. To say that truth is a value can mean at least two things. First, it can mean that truth is the answer to this question. In virtue of what are beliefs in good standing or correct? Thus, we might say, for example, that a belief qua belief is correct just when its content is true. Now, to endorse this thought is to endorse that, in one sense of the word, norm, that truth is the basic norm of belief, or so I'll argue later. It needn't be the only norm, of course, I should say, right at the outset. Beliefs can also be correct when they're justified, for example, and because of that, we presumably sometimes correctly believe what is false. Thus, the correctness of believing what is true must be pro tanto. It is always correct, but not always correct, all things considered. Now, the idea that truth is a norm of belief is one thing that we sometimes mean when we say that truth is a value. But there is another thing that we might have in mind as well. To see what it is, consider this. You might think that being a winning move is what makes a particular move in a game correct, but wonder why we should care about winning. In the same way, you might think that being true is what makes a belief correct, but wonder why we should care about having correct beliefs. You might wonder why having true beliefs is valuable. The fact that we can even raise this question points at the second thing we typically mean when we say that truth is a value. Having true beliefs is a good. If so, then we should strive to reach it while engaging in any practice that aims at producing beliefs. Inquiry is one such practice. So having true beliefs is, as it were, a worthy goal of inquiry, the practice of figuring out what to believe. This thought, too, is often identified with the pragmatist, who in some moods goes so far as to identify truth with that which we strive towards during inquiry. So the two different thoughts here are on your handout, norm and goal. Of course, there's much debate, which I'm not going to go into here, about how to properly characterize these two values, norm and goal. I've done so very loosely on the handout. One thing I will note that I'm going to use is you might think, for example, that norm, as I have it on handout, underwrites an equivalence. That is norm star, the belief that P is correct if and only if the proposition that P is true. And the idea here would be to see norm on the handout as expressing a Socratic reading of norm star, as telling us that the right-hand side has explanatory priority over the left. And of course, on the other hand, you might think that, you know, norm star is too strong. It really shouldn't be a biconditional, right? And there's various disagreements about how to cash these claims out. I'm not going to get into that today. I'm not going to fuss over those details. All right. So now, what I want to turn to instead today is the question of whether goal and norm tell us anything about truth. Now, it seems to me right away that norm and goal do tell us something about truth. In the first instance, they tell us something about true beliefs, or perhaps we might say beliefs in true propositions. If having true beliefs is valuable, then goal tells us that true propositions are those we should aim at and believe in during inquiry. And norm tells us that true propositions are those that are correct to believe. Now, while these truisms are explicitly about true propositions or believe true propositions, they implicitly describe the property of, in virtue of which propositions are true, or so I think. The property that we might put it this way, the property that plays the truth role. They implicitly describe that. And so we might say, as hopefully on your handout, N1 and G1, if a property plays the truth role, then it is had by propositions which are correct in believing. If a property plays the truth role, then it is had by propositions we aim during inquiry to believe. Of course, it's an open question how deep, right, these facts happen to be. And I'll have more to say about that later. Right now, I'm content to point out that however you conceive of the information goal and norm give us about truth, that information has a normative character. And this normative character is what suggests that the information contained in norm and goal is distinct from the information contained in purely descriptive platitudes, such as the equivalence schema, the proposition that P is true if and only if P. Now, arguably, we cannot derive goal or norm from purely descriptive equivalence schema. And if that was right, then a central view of some philosophers is going to be mistaken. It's not going to be, as Paul said before, it would seem not to be true that we can know all the facts about the property that plays, or know all the facts about truth, or as I would put it, know all the facts about the property that plays the truth role, just by grasping instances of the equivalence schema. All right? Now, here we face an obvious objection to this little argument that I just sketched. For ease of exposition, I'm going to put the objection in terms of norm, but, you know, actually I think a similar thing could occur over goal. The objection is that we can derive, let's say, norm star from the equivalence schema as long as we add a further non-truth theoretic fact. What we can say, for example, is B. It is correct to believe the proposition of P if and only if P. And then we add the equivalence schema, and presto, norm star, it is correct to believe that the proposition that P if and only if it is true that P. Now, in short, the thought goes, norm doesn't tell us anything new about truth or norm star. It merely demonstrates the expressive use of the truth predicate. So, okay, let's look at this derivation. I don't find it too persuasive, and here are some reasons to think that might be right. The first is that it's difficult to see why we should accept instances of B in the absence of already being committed to the implicit generalization norm star. For the list of B's instances is an infinite list of normative prescriptions, a list of little belief norms, as it were. It is correct to believe snow is white if and only if snow is white. It is correct to believe that roses are red if and only if roses are red, and so forth. But now we're faced with the obvious question. Why should we accept each of these individual norms? Individual normative prescriptions are justified by general normative principles. Consider promising. It is correct to keep your promise to Tom for the same reason it is correct to keep your promise to Bridget, because it is correct other things being equal, to keep your promises. So too, one might think, with truth. It is prima facie or pro tanto correct to believe that grass is green for the same reason it is correct to believe that snow is white, because it is correct to believe what is true. The general normative principle, norm star in this case, is in the epistemic driver's seat. Consequently, we are justified in accepting instances of B only in virtue of accepting instances of norm star, so one might say. Now, it's important to keep in mind that I'm not just merely restating the point made familiar from Gupta that you can't get generalizations from schemas. I don't think you can, but that's not my present point. The point is about the epistemology of norms. In ethics, there is a position known as particularism, according to which there are no true general moral principles. Or, if there are, no such principle does any epistemic work in our moral reasoning. Now, perhaps particularism about morality is true, although I doubt it. It has always been hard for me to take seriously the idea that there are no true generalizations about some subject matter, since that seems to be a generalization. My present point is that even if it was true for morality, it seems very implausible when applied to cognitive norms like truth. It seems, rather, very plausible that the reason it is correct to believe that snow is white when snow is white is the very same reason it is correct to believe that oysters are tasty when they are tasty. Namely, it is correct to believe what is true. You ought to endorse the individual prescriptions because of a general normative truth. Now, of course, you could avoid what I just said by going and finding yourself some logical apparatus that allows you to generalize over B. Something like substitutional or propositional quantification might come to mind. Fair enough. But you'd face a further point, one that, to my mind at any rate, seems sufficient. In order for it to be persuasive that norm isn't really about truth, it must be convincing that the generalized version of B is not about truth either. But why think that? Indeed, if generalized B were said to be a good paraphrase of norm star, then we would have just as much reason to think that generalized B was about truth as we do for thinking norm star is about truth. Good paraphrases carry their ontological commitments with them. Otherwise, they wouldn't be good paraphrases. Well, okay, so what reason might there be to think that generalized B isn't about truth? What would it be? Well, one reason to think that it's not about truth is to say that norm is just really tells us that whatever it tells us something about belief, not truth. Indeed, it does seem plausible that we could learn something about belief from norm. We might even go so far as to say that the fact that beliefs are correct in virtue of their contents being true is partly constitutive of what it is to be a belief. Believing, unlike hoping, desiring, or assuming, is a propositional attitude that, as David Velleman has put it, can go right or wrong by way of the proposition being believed being true or false. Now, of course, this seems right. It seems to me that belief norm does tell us something about belief. I disagree with Paul about this, but I do think it tells us something about belief, constitutive about belief. But I also think it tells us something about truth. It's not like things like that can only tell us, you know, something about one thing. It seems to me it tells us something about belief and truth. And in fact, I think norm tells us three things about truth, and this is what I want to talk about now. So what does it tell us? Well, first, this is on your handout, I'm going to argue that it tells us that truth, or strictly the property that plays the truth role, is a fundamental norm. B, that it is regulative of any practice aimed at producing beliefs. And C, that it is an unobstractable norm. I'm going to spend most of my time on the first one. So first, norm tells us implicitly that truth is the most fundamental norm of belief. And to see this point, let's turn to a thought experiment of Yu's. Price asks us to imagine a community of speakers who don't recognize a truth norm of assertion, one which is parallel to the truth norm of belief that we've been considering. The imagined community, he calls them moans, instead takes itself to operate by two weaker norms. The first norm is the norm of sincerity. One ought to assert what one believes. The second norm is one of warranted assertability, according to which what makes an assertion correct or incorrect is whether it is warranted. Now, presumably, this norm itself is not understood by the members of the community as being defined in terms of truth. That would sort of collapse the point of the experiment. For them, let's say, being based on adequate grounds is just, for example, something like being coherent with one's previous assertions. So for the Moans, when one person, for example, in that community asserts, for example, Sarah Palin is a genius, what they are asserting is correct according to the norms of the community just when they believe it, and it is coherent with their previous assertions. And someone who asserts the negation of the above is likewise correct just when her assertion is sincere and coherent with her past assertions, right? Now, as Price has noted, the Moans needn't lack a disquotational truth predicate. We can still imagine them using the concept of truth to generalize over their assertions. Someone who asserts everything Sarah Palin says is true can be thought to be asserting something like, if Sarah Palin says that X, then X, if Sarah Palin says that Y, then Y, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, the conjuncts here, if asserted, are correct according to the community, only in virtue of whether they are warranted in the sense in which they understand the term. But that doesn't mean they can't use the disquotational truth predicate. That seems to be right. So what is lacking in this society? Well, one thing that seems to be lacking, Price says, is conversational engagement in fundamental disagreement or criticism. The Moans seem to be blind to the fact, so obvious to us, that assertions can be criticized as being right or wrong independently of whether those assertions are warranted by the community's standards. And surely this is right. There is no disagreement in assertion amongst the Moans. But that doesn't, at least to me, seem to imply that there's no disagreement. It just means that the Moans are sort of like a bunch of college students who say, whatever, dude, right? When confronted with anyone else's claims, right? You know, Sarah Palin is a genius, whatever, dude, it's cool, right? That sort of thought. They can't be really bothered to dig in, to confront one another, just so long as consistency is gained. But they still might believe each other to be mistaken, even if they tolerate one another's assertions. So let's modify Price's thought experiment. Let's imagine that in addition to lacking a truth norm for assertion, our imaginary community also lacks one for belief. Let's imagine, in short, that they are not governed by norm, whether or not they recognize this fact. We can imagine that the members of our community still accept certain propositions and reject others. And we can say these mental acceptances, I'm thinking of these as mental states, are correct, let's just say, when they are coherent with what they've accepted in the past. So they have mental states, they have norms operating on those mental states, and again, it seems possible, if we can imagine this at all, that they have a truth predicate that allows them to generalize over strings of the contents of such states. Okay? Now, Price's community lacked the ability to disagree in assertion, but it seems clear that our new community lacks quite a bit more. They lack the ability to disagree in belief. And there is an obvious reason why. They don't have beliefs. In accepting what they accept and rejecting what they reject, our imagined community is governed only by whether or not those acceptances are coherent or incoherent with what a given member has accepted in the past. If so, and if norm is constitutive of belief, of course that's an assumption, they lack beliefs. Where beliefs vanish, so does inquiry. Inquiry just is the practice of trying to figure out what to believe. Now, sure, our super Moans, as we might call them, look like they inquire. They'll ask questions, give answers. They might go through the motions of what looks like belief formation, at least sometimes. But they wouldn't be trying to answer the questions correctly. They'd just be looking to accept answers that are consistent with their previous acceptances. And that is hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine because it sounds to us like such people would really only be engaged in an elaborate game of wishful thinking. So what does this tell us? What it tells us is that what we, I think, already know, insofar as we disagree with each other, we must be believers and inquirers. Then we are governed, when that happens, we're governed by the values of truth. But it also tells us something subtly different. The values in question can't be reduced to purely epistemic, non-truth conducive values. For the members of our second community have norms that express such values, but they lack the goal and the norm of truth. Consequently, the truth norm is more basic than a warrant norm. Note that this is even more obvious when, unlike our modified Moans, our super Moans, we take warrant to be defined as that which makes our belief likely to be true. Here we take warrant to be subservient to truth by definition. It is correct to believe what is warranted because doing so is likely to result in having true beliefs. Okay, coming back around to the point. Above, we imagine that someone could respond to our earlier arguments by claiming that while norm is true, it is distinct from ES. It really doesn't tell us anything about truth. It only tells us about belief. But we now have a reason to doubt this. The reason is that, in grasping norm, we already grasp something about truth. Namely, that in virtue of which it is correct to believe a proposition is, as we put it in the first page, a more basic norm than justification or warrant. Consequently, norm, or even a generalized version of norm star, isn't just about belief. To grasp such facts is to grasp something about truth, to learn that truth is the most fundamental norm of belief. Okay, I didn't neglect to see when I started. How much time do I have? I have about another 5 minutes.
Okay.
So norm also tells us again implicitly that truth, so let me just briefly say something about the second thing I think it tells us about truth, that it's a regulative property. A consequence of truth being the fundamental normative standard of belief is that the having of that property plays a regulative role for any practice that aims at producing belief. Let's say a property P plays a regulative role in a practice just by virtue of property P plays a regulative role in practice when, just by virtue of participating in that practice, one is normatively committed to regulating one's moves in the practice by judgments about what has or lacks that property. Thus, the property of being a winning chess move is regulative of chess. In playing chess, I am committed to regulating my moves by my judgments of what is or isn't a winning move. Likewise, in figuring out what to believe, that is, when engaged in an inquiry, I'm committed to regulating my doxastic practices by my judgments about what is or isn't true. Indeed, I'm regulated by the truth in inquiry in the most direct possible way. The recognition that P is true is a decisive reason to believe it. Third, our reflections also tell us about that truth is an unabstractable norm of belief. Here's a terrible term, but here's what I mean. Skeptical views about value generally presuppose that we can take what Mark Timmins has called a disengaged standpoint towards values. That is, that we can distinguish the standpoint from which we make, for example, our moral commitments and the standpoint from which we explain the point, nature, and truth of those commitments. In the case of moral values, it is not difficult, I think, to take the disengaged standpoint. We do so by noticing that human beings can engage in actions, but take moral values different from our own to govern those actions. We note that engaging in action doesn't necessitate having particular moral values to evaluate those actions. But note that something very different is going on in the case of the cognitive values picked out by norm and goal. For our Pricean thought experiment suggests that we can't abstract in the requisite way. We can't imagine a community of believers and inquirers, not governed by the norm and by norm and goal. We can't imagine people doing things and having mental states that are somewhat like, we can imagine them doing things, right, and having mental states that are somewhat like believing and inquiring, but that is it. We can't seem to sufficiently disengage from those values to be skeptical in the same way about them. Now, in sum, I think we should acknowledge that the normative truisms, norm and goal, tell us something important about the property that plays the truth role, something distinct from what we learn about truth from platitudes like the equivalent schema. And Price, I think, would agree, of course. What I expect him to point out, however, is that this doesn't mean that a broadly deflationary view of truth is false. Now, as we've just been talking, deflationism nowadays is hard to pin down. It's a word like realism or naturalism. It's hard to know just if it's just uttered what one's talking about. But put that aside, here's one respect in which a theory of truth can be called deflationary. It says that we can know all the facts about truth just by grasping the ordinary concept of truth. Being true, on such an account, is a lot like being a conjunction. You understand everything about being a conjunction just by grasping the truth tables. Nothing is left out. Price can say his view is still deflationary in this respect. We might put it like this: to understand what truth is to understand that it is a property that plays a particular functional role in our cognitive life. But that role is exhausted by some simple truisms. One, perhaps, is an equivalent schema. Another, One sort of deflationist thinks that this is exhausted by the equivalent schema. So somebody like Paul, for example, might say, okay, what you just said is fine. There's, you know, he actually doesn't think I think about deflationism the way he just said exactly, but he might say something like that. But another sort of philosopher, Price's sort, thinks that we need to add a little bit more, norm and goal, for example, or at least norm. But both think that there is nothing else to say about truth once we've grasped these truisms. Okay, last bit. Now, I'm sympathetic to this picture. I agree that to understand truth is to grasp a particular functional role. But sometimes, Price wishes to go a bit further in the deflationary direction. He would like for us to see that in some ways our talk of property of truth is a fiction. Now, this doesn't mean, of course, that he thinks that it is true that there is no truth or anything like that. We all know that. Rather, he says that he is like the person who, rather than saying there is no God, rejects the theological language game entirely. But I am not sure this is something we can do in the case of truth. As I argued above, it is difficult to disengage from the values of truth in the way that we can do in the moral values, or so I think. We can't seem to pull away from them, to see them as extrinsic to inquiry and belief. Perhaps this is not a deep metaphysical fact about truth, but it is, to my mind, an important fact. It is a fact that urges us not to stop asking further questions about truth, but actually ask more. So here's the idea. Truth as such may be a very thin property. Beliefs are true when they're correct, when they're the sorts of beliefs we aim at having an inquiry, when the world is as they portray it as being. This is the job description of truth, as it were. But that's entirely consistent with there being other properties distinct from truth, which satisfy this description and so realize that thin property, which in short play the truth role. And that, it seems to me, is an interesting possibility. For it opens the door to appealing to these other properties, to explain the differences in content between our beliefs about, for example, morality and our beliefs about middle-sized dry goods. It opens the door, in short, to an exciting pluralism of just the sort you has often championed, one according to which all beliefs are correct when true, but not all beliefs have their truth realized in the same way. So let me end with a final point of agreement. One thing I've always thought the pragmatists had right is that if you want to know what something is, you need to understand what it does, how it matters in our cognitive economy, and why we care about it. The pragmatists' big idea was that this held not just for ideas like belief and assertion, but for truth itself. And their idea still seems right to me, at least in spirit, if not in detail. If you want to understand truth, you must understand truth's values. Thank you.